Translation. Nanda Maharaj and the other gopas exclaimed, "My dear friends, you must know that Anakodundabi Vasudev has become a great saint or master of mystic power. Otherwise, how could he have foreseen this calamity and predicted it to us?" So Srila Prabhupada comments. This verse illustrates the difference between Kshatriyas and innocent Vaishyas. By studying the political situation, Vasudev could see what would happen, whereas Nanda Maharaj, the king of the agriculturalists, could only guess that Vasudev was a great saintly person and had developed mystic powers. Vasudev actually had all mystic powers under his control. Otherwise, he could not have become the father of Krishna. But in fact, he foresaw the calamities in Vraj by studying Kamsa's political activities, and thus warned Nanda Maharaj to take precautions. Although Nanda Maharaj thought that Vasudev had predicted this incident through wonderful mystic powers. By mystic powers gained through the practice of Hatha Yoga, one can study and understand the future. Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Timanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So any questions? This bit in between is called the class. And one is meant to give the class based on realizations. And realizations come through two things. One is by having divinely revealed knowledge from the Lord in the heart, the Supersoul, which is genuine realizations. And the other comes by experience in this world. And there's a third way that you can give class, by being endowed with mystic power and seeing the future. And then you can give the people who come to the class, "I can see, madam, I can see your future. Sir, I can see your future." And sometimes people do like this. However, past, our rotten past, our positive and wonderful future, and our magnificent present have all been given to us by the grace of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And it is said that a devotee, when looking at past, present, and future, he becomes very negative about his past, very determined about his present, and very positive about his future. These three phases of time. Negative about his past. Why? Because the devotee says, "Over many thousands of lifetimes, what sin did I not commit? I must have committed every conceivable sin. And I must have been punished for every conceivable sin to get me to this point of surrender. Now I'm surrendering. Now I'm really trying hard to surrender to you, my Lord, which means I must have come through all of that. And somehow or another, you were my guide all the way through." So this is surrender. This is surrender, our topic for the day. We've just got through the first of the demons, Putana. Now, Putana, there are a few episodes in Krishna's activities which are worshipped all over India, not just for us Gaudiyas, but all over India, the Sri Vaishnavas and the Ramanandis and everybody, just everybody looks to Krishna. One is the Damodar pastimes, Krishna being tied by wooden grinding mortar. Everybody is shocked by that pastime. How is that possible, to be shocked by one of Krishna's pastimes? Well, it's because when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's the origin of everything, the master of everyone, the Lord of creation, he comes into this world and he allows himself to be tied up. Normally when people think of God, they think of this most powerful person. But he is the most powerful person allowing himself to be a tiny baby, and he's tied with rope. Not only that, he has to... it's one thing to become a baby, but it's another thing entirely to be tied up with rope. Oh, the indignity of Almighty God being tied up by a rope. How is that possible? So this is one pastime. The other pastime is Krishna Kaliya, because it represents to the devotees that any poison within the system will be danced on very artistically by Krishna's feet. And as Krishna was dancing on Kaliya, he was tapping out a rhythm on Kaliya's many heads. One time Prabhupada was in a tent program, a pandal program, and somebody challenged, you know, there's always hecklers. And Prabhupada was very good with hecklers. So someone said, "Swamiji, so this pastime of Krishna means that, you know, he was some atheist." He said, and then Prabhupada proceeded to explain 26 different things that were accomplished by the dancing of Krishna on the head of Kaliya. Even including, he said, when Krishna's feet were spinning round, Krishna's feet were describing the movements of the stars. It just floored everybody. Now, where did that come from? It's just occasionally, you know, sometimes Prabhupada would say things that were just, "Oh yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah, Sarva Dharma Prajaja. Yeah, I've heard that before. This verse. Yeah, that was an average class, Prabhupada. Thank you very much." Sometimes it would be like that. Not for me, of course. But one time, there was one devotee who, he was kind of like a genius. Like, he could remember, you know, so many verses. He probably remembered all the verses of, you know, that Prabhupada was using. So one time, Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasana, he was sitting just to Prabhupada's side. And Prabhupada was coming out with one verse after another. And this devotee was Prabhupada's secretary, and he'd been with him on his journey. And so he'd watched Prabhupada's class-giving capability. But as much as he noticed the brilliance, he also noticed a sort of routine verse use. And so he was thinking, okay. Now Prabhupada's going to use this verse. Now he's going to follow up with this verse. Now he's going to say, "just like," and he's going to... So he was getting it right. And then Prabhupada he looked at everybody, he stopped the class, and then he looked at him and he said, "So, now you think you know everything?" The strange thoughts of the disciple, they come out very loud to a person who can perceive the mind. It's only us very limited people that you have to, you know, you have to talk to someone to find out, and then they speak to you and you find out what's going on in their mind. But someone of Prabhupada's caliber can, he can just, "Ooh, where did that come from? Who is it? Oh yeah, it's you sitting there. why are you thinking like that?" And this devotee said, he never did that again. He learned to check his mind. So Krishna knows the mind of everyone, and if the pure devotee knows Krishna, then he's a bit of a mind reader. Prabhupada very rarely made telephone calls, but one time he said, "Please make a telephone call to this, my one disciple." It's just, you know, she wasn't an important disciple. But he picked up the telephone, and she'd broken her leg that day. So Prabhupada knew what was going with that particular disciple. "Telephone my disciple, she's hurt in some way." I heard that story. So many stories. And yet, there are some people who want to extrapolate that on and on and on. "Oh yes, Prabhupada was omniscient. He knew everything. He knew everything that was happening everywhere." No, he didn't. But one time they asked him, "Srila Prabhupada, how do you know what is happening with all your devotees?" He said, "Normally through the postman." "Normally the postman tells me. You know, normally I get a letter." Someone was fishing. "Oh yes, I can see what each one of you are doing at every moment." No. If that happened, then that is something that Krishna wanted him to know. He was in Krishna's hands. So Krishna already knew that Putana was coming, and we've just got through an episode which we still, these demon-killing pastimes, we still live out today when we do our samskaras. When we do our samskaras, with babies in particular, you know, the hair cutting or the first grains or the something that none of you sitting here will have to worry about. But for a good portion of the world, they have children and they also want to protect them. So we have samskaras, which were given to us by Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. These samskaras are ceremonies, spiritual ceremonies, religious ceremonies in life that you do at different stages in life to protect others. You're usually doing them to protect others. So, you know, you give a child first grains, that's protection. You offer protective prayers, that's protection. You give initiation, that's protection. You do marriage, that's protection. It's all poshanam, all poshanam. The Lord's function of protection for you in this material world means that you adopt different modes of coping with this horrible thing that you've that you found yourself in once again. In fact, only until you understand the material world is actually a terrible place and is like a prison house, you cannot surrender to Krishna. If you're still thinking that there is some enjoyment available in the material world, then you can't really surrender to Krishna. Initiation does not mean surrender. It means that at one point in time, I was convinced that I should really surrender. Okay? But initiation doesn't mean that you've surrendered. You surrendered a little bit, and then the real struggle begins. And the struggle goes on for the rest of life. So sometimes we say rather cheaply, I think, you know, when did you surrender to Krishna? Initiation gives you the tools, okay? It gives you the tools to begin the process of surrender. Okay? And there may be different arguments for that, because surrender represents for many people, like I was speaking to one person, and this person said, I'm getting initiated tomorrow, okay? And I said, oh, it's just like my graduation ceremony. I feel like I've really arrived. I've really graduated. You know, it's been the end of a long, long struggle in my life to get everything I needed to do in my life ready so that I get initiated. I feel like I've finally come to the end. I said, well, I hate to disappoint you, but I said, initiation comes from the word initiare. Initiation comes from the word initiare, which Vishwambha will now tell us means the beginning. So some people, they wait 5 years, 10 years, sometimes even 15 years before they become initiated. And for them, this is the conclusion, you know, getting your name and the fire yagyas and everybody's banging drums and, you know, now you're a different person. You're no longer a such and such. You're a das or a dasi. And it's fantastic and it's wonderful. And then someone like me comes and says, yeah, welcome to the beginning. No, this is the end of my surrender. I have finally surrendered to Krishna. So it may seem, yes, I should be rewarded for this. Actually, you should be rewarded, because it has taken not just a struggle of 10, 15 years in this lifetime, or if you're really quick and you know the temple president, 6 months or a year. But it should be, this is the struggle of thousands of lifetimes. Thousands of lifetimes. Thousands of lifetimes. And this is the lifetime where we actually choose. We actually choose. Of course, you may have been initiated in the past. You know, you may have been initiated in the past 7 lifetimes. And this lifetime, you're continuing from where you left off, because initiation doesn't always mean that you make rapid spiritual progress in that life. A lot of people get initiated and relax. Okay? They get initiated and they relax. Next lifetime, initiated and relax. And breathe. You've been through all that struggle. Now you're initiated. Okay, take a breather. And we see many people come and many people go, because they relax too soon. You can relax when you're back in the spiritual world. Then it's a picnic, literally. But until then, you have to work damn hard. You really, really have to work hard. Every day is a fresh opportunity for you to become initiated to the next course, the next period. Every day will throw up some opportunity for you to surrender. Whether it's that person that you don't like, that Vaishnav, you just, oh, it makes you so angry. Okay. Surrendering. Whether it's that job that you don't like doing, surrendering. Okay. Surrender actually means you have no more fight against this. You know, it means this. Surrender means this. You put your hands up in the air. I surrender. Okay, surrender doesn't mean you have a little pocket knife left in your pocket or another concealed weapon. Surrender means you hand over all your weapons. And what are your weapons? These are your weapons with which you want to fight God. You know, the Jewish religion has this expression, wrestling with God. Huh? Oh, the bandits are always there. They're hiding behind a rock. I forget which poet said that, but on your journey through spiritual life, the bandits are hiding behind the rock. Mr. Lust, Mr. Greed, Mr. Anger, Mr. Madness, they're hiding behind the trees. These are bandits that will try to take you. That's the whole principle of the book, the famous book, which at one time in this country, in the 1600s, was read as much as the Bible. And that was The Pilgrim's Progress, this heavenly vision. When I was a child, I just used to look at the pictures. The words didn't make much sense to me, but we had a copy of The Pilgrim's Progress. Pretty much every house in this country, you have a Bible. Nobody reads it, but you know you have to have one. Pretty much like a Hindu household, right? You have to have a set of Srimad Bhagavatams because somebody in the temple told you. 30 years later, you go there, and the Srimad Bhagavatams really haven't been opened. And these days you can find out because some of them are still wrapped in plastic from the time they bought them. Whereas the televisions have grown in size from this to this to this to this. The spiritual books on the bookshelf are still wrapped in plastic. I mean, how mad would it be if you bought a 48-inch or 50 or 60-inch television screen and you kept it in the box in a corner of the room? That would be madness, wouldn't it? But here, they buy a set of Srimad Bhagavatams, okay, and they're still wrapped in plastic. Now, we actually need not just a book distribution program, okay, let that go on, but we have a book unwrapping program where the devotees come to your house and the devotees will actually help you to surrender by taking the plastic off the Srimad Bhagavatam and showing you that there is such a thing called a book. People are losing touch with books, okay? People are losing touch with books, especially spiritual books. So we need a plastic Bhagavatam unwrapping program. So Vishrambha, you have to start this program. You have to go to every home in the country and unwrap those Bhagavatams. You have to take a duster with you, or a mini Bhagavatam vacuum cleaner that you only use for the Bhagavatams. Unfortunately, my dear friends, the point of surrender, the point at which they surrendered, was buying the Bhagavatam. But they didn't realize that the struggle came the day after. So initiation means, okay, that's good. You did it. Thank you very much, this lifetime. Now comes Putana. Okay, Krishna is born within your heart, and immediately comes Putana. Immediately, just a few days, how many days after? Just a few days after, Putana came. And Putana came as the deceptive witch, came in a beautiful form to give Krishna, to give him the most demonic thing. The most demonic thing is when a person poses as a parent. Come along. Your daddy told me to come and pick you up from school. Your mummy says it's okay for me to take you to shopping. These we still reserve our greatest horror for. These monsters that abuse children, steal children, kidnap children, traffic children by selling them on to other perverted people. Still, this will be front page news in our newspapers. And parents, it's every parent's greatest worry that my child will be taken away by one of these demons. They're still here today. And they were still there in Vrindavan thousands of years ago. So we become initiated. And then very next day, Putana arrives. And who does Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, who is Putana? Who's Putana? She's analogous to the false guru. The false guru comes to you with the milk of human kindness. Okay? Milk of human kindness. I'm a guru. And then what happens? Oh, it gives you poison. So many of our devotees had to be cautioned by Srila Prabhupada. And it's caution that I feel has been thrown to the wind these days. They say that expression. You've thrown caution to the wind. We always have to be cautious of false gurus. I'm not talking about within our institution, but there have been times in history when that caution would have, you know, been an advantage. But there are many who have not surrendered their lives to the same person as we have. There are many who have not surrendered their lives to Krishna, although they give off the appearances of being surrendered to Krishna. So this is Putana. She gives off the appearances of being a beautiful lady, someone who is a wet nurse in villages. They used to have one. People used to breastfeed their other children, each other's children, because of irregularities, and they would need that. And she comes as a person who has got all good intentions. So the false guru comes with all good intentions. But who's the false guru? Is he a man in India with a beard? No. He could be the person in the next bunk to you. Person that you encounter even sitting on this cushion, giving a talk. Any person who sits on this cushion doesn't mean that you can trust them. Don't trust me. Don't trust me. You have to trust what I'm saying by comparing it to what Prabhupada says. So therefore, you have to read everything that Prabhupada says before you can really trust anybody. Does that make sense? I mean, think about it. How do you know what a person sitting on this cushion, whether they're saying what is right or what is wrong? You don't. And Bhaktivedanta Mana has the greatest collection of international speakers of any temple in the world. Okay? So you have to, your ability to trust is like, yes, she may be here to give milk, but she may be a Putana. She may be a Putana. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura cautions us, be very, very careful. And Prabhupada had to take the role of Vasudev. Prabhupada had to take the role of Vasudev, the father of Krishna, by telling us, watch out, there may be demons about. Okay? Watch out. I was telling a funny story to devotees yesterday on our way to Brighton Rathiatra, which is why my face is red. Brighton Rathiatra, there's a lot of sunshine. And if you don't use, you know, factor, you know, 120, then your face ends up looking like this. But we were telling about one devotee who came here to Bhaktivedanta Mana, and he was a brahmachari, just like you, nicely shining in orange. And he'd seen that if you carried a stick in the Krishna consciousness movement, you got the Mahaprasadam. And you got treated very nicely, and you got picked up from airports. Okay, even then we were doing it. But then, in my day, there was, 15 sannyasis or something. Okay, but they got treated well, because they were in the blueprint of Prabhupada, you know, the lone individual traveling, the stick, And so he decided to pick some bamboo from the bamboo bush over here by the lake, made himself a dunda secretly in the ashram upstairs, wrapped it in, an old dhoti, got on the plane, went to Italy, got off the plane, phoned the local temple, said, I'm such and such Maharaj, would you come to the airport and pick me up? And he got really, really treated very nicely in Italy. He got all the best prasadam and, you know, got all the classes, and he was able. But it was on the fourth class. When the fourth class was just the same as the first class, they thought, maybe he doesn't know very much. Let us phone Bhaktivedanta Mana to find out who he is, actually. And Bhaktivedanta Mana said, oh, yeah, he's a brahmachari. Now, I don't know whether they threw him in the lake or threw him in the river Tiber. But we must have the same. We must be fearless, actually, in ripping aside the pretense of someone if they purport to speak on behalf of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who we have, or we're in the process of surrendering our lives to. Now, here's the difficulty. Prabhupada said some things which were easy to accept, and Prabhupada said some things which were difficult to accept. And we have to accept both. Both the things we like and the things that we don't like. There are some who will want to tell you that Prabhupada was always jolly and always laughing and always smiling and always kind, you know. And these speakers, we love them, don't we? And then other speakers will forget to tell you. Then there's other speakers, of course. I'm thinking of Jayadvaita Swami, who will tell you how Prabhupada cut, chopped, diced, spliced, exposed, ridiculed. And we get this side. Of course, the extreme end of that is probably Bhakti Vikas Swami, who likes to chop. And the extreme end of the other is, I don't know, you know, Fluffy Das, who likes to present Prabhupada in a different way. Prabhupada was in New York, and he gave a class, morning Bhagavatam class, and he said something like, so controlling the tongue means only eating Krishna prasadam. Every day a festival, every day feasting. And all the devotees went, yay! And then he flew to Los Angeles, and some of those devotees that were with him the day before, they came there. And then the verse, as it was, the next verse in the Bhagavatam was, you know, also about tongue control. And so he said, so, controlling the tongue means fasting. Rascal tongue, control that tongue. And of course, someone at the end of the class said, Prabhupada, he said, yesterday in New York you said feasting and today you say fasting. Then Prabhupada just looked at him and he said, you listened to me yesterday, you listen to me today. Meaning that today I'm talking about fasting. You also listen to me. So sometimes the guru speaks things which you don't want to accept. Okay? Which really don't really help your image of a surrendered devotee. We like to think ourselves as a surrendered devotee. But the guru has to tell you that you're not. Basically. When you're down, the guru has to tell you, you're so surrendered. Thank you for helping me spread this movement. Your book distribution, you're just like yogis. You're spending, you know, just, you know, thousands of years as a yogi in the Himalayas. It's only worth one day on the street distributing my books. You're such wonderful people. You know, my spiritual masters sent you to me. You know, now we are back together again. So there's that Prabhupada. And the other Prabhupada is, you foolish nonsense rascal. When are you going to surrender to Krishna? So both of those gurus are absolutely important. Otherwise, you don't get the full complement. You know, we talk about I said last time, I'll say it again, because some of the faces are. Prabhupada said, the guru has one hand inside the metal, and he has the other hand with his hammer outside, and he's making a pot. He's making the disciple into a pot. So he's tapping, tapping, tap, 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 tap. He's hitting. But inside, he is supporting. And that is how you shape a metal pot. Lots of little hits on the outside, but supporting inside. Without those two, just the hitting, the metal collapses. Just the supporting, nothing takes shape. So the guru has to be both. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, we are guilty of committing Ardha Murgi Nyaya, the half-chicken philosophy. The farmer wants the back end of the chicken because it lays eggs, but doesn't like the front part of the chicken, because it costs money. So he cuts the chicken in half and he ends up with nothing. So this movement, in one sense, in a material sense, was not meant to happen. Really. If you think about it, there's no way that somebody with Prabhupada's message could ever have been successful. Couldn't have been successful. Telling young people in their 20s to be celibate. That's cross that off. Telling young people who liked drugs to give up drugs. Okay, we cross that off. That's another, it shouldn't have been successful. Everything that Prabhupada said. Krishna is taking Arjuna to war. The battle of Kurukshetra had to be fought. When Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, he fought the battle. Speaking that to people who didn't even want to go and fight in Vietnam. It shouldn't have been successful. The only reason this movement is successful is because it is born of Krishna. It is dedicated to Krishna. And Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is the only movement that is really extending the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, to others. And we're doing it in a particular way. None of our messages should make sense. They really shouldn't make sense. There are far many more spiritual leaders in the 60s who were giving a very comfortable message. And now they've gone. And their movements have gone with them. But during the time, it would perplex the devotees. They would think, if only Prabhupada could speak like this, then we would be more. There would be more devotees. We would keep more devotees, and it would be more successful. But those spiritual masters have gone. New ones have taken their place, which also have a sort of very nice message. Like the man with the beard. The story of the man with the beard giving the Bhagavatam class, and the lady in the front was crying. You know that story? He gets to the end of the Bhagavatam class and he's noticed out of his eyes, and noticed this woman who's crying, and he's talking about Krishna. So he's thinking, she's really understanding. She's really understanding how great a raconteur I am. Let me go and speak to her. So then he speaks to her afterwards and he said, "My dear," I said, "I just noticed that during my Bhagavatam class you were crying. You crying for Krishna?" She said, "Well, no." She said, "But when I saw your beard going up and down, I was thinking of a goat that died last week, and he was my pet goat, so I was crying because of him." So Prabhupada's example is of the cheaters and the cheated. Cheaters and the cheated. He's cheating. He's looking for someone in the audience to flatter him that he's such a great bhakta. She at the main, she's deceiving him. Okay, well, not deceiving him, but giving off the appearances. So it's a mutual deception. So when guru and disciple are locked in a mutual deception, this is producing nothing. So what Prabhupada did, he cautioned his early devotees, don't go outside the Krishna Balaram temple and hear from anybody else. I was 31. I joined the movement when I was 17. I was 31, maybe 32, before I could go to Radhakund. Before we were allowed to go to Radhakund. Because Prabhupada said, whoever wants to go to Radhakund will go to Narakund. He said, they will not find the lake of Radha, they will find the lake of hell. And that's a very strong statement. Because, of course, if you look in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami is saying, come on, everybody, come and live at Radhakund. There's no better place to live than Radhakund. And so these are confused messages. Well, the message was heard by the first devotees in the BBT. I think it was 1975, I walked into the upstairs room in Berry Place, our temple there, and Prabhu Vishnu, our temple president, was reading a typewritten, a little photocopy, typewritten, may not even have been a photocopy, actually, one of these early mimeograph things. I said, "Oh, what have you got there?" He said, "I'm reading a new book that Prabhupada said." A new book by Prabhupada was, first of all, the typewritten manuscript sometimes, that people in the BBT would send. If it was Nectar, you'd get 20 pages of Prabhupada's next book, and we were all patiently waiting for Prabhupada's book to be completed. So sometimes they would take a little portion of one of Prabhupada's books just so that we could see, this is what Prabhupada's writing about now in the fourth canto. Otherwise, you'd have to wait a year, 18 months, maybe 2 years for a fourth canto to come. So they had sent the Upadesh Amrita. Upadeshamrita, and the BBT was still thinking of a title for it. It was either going to be called The Nectar of Learning or The Nectar of Instruction. So we didn't know at that point, Nectar of Instruction or Nectar of Learning. So anyway, Prabhupada occasionally would say, you know, different things. Like someone put a picture of Krishna, beautiful painting of Krishna, on the front of the Shirsh Upanishad, new version of the Shirsh Upanishad. Prabhupada said, why have you done this? Well, it's Krishna, Prabhupada. I know it's Krishna. But why have you put Krishna on the front of the Upanishad? It should be Vishnu. It's the Vedas, Vishnu. So change it. Oh, sorry. We thought we were doing better because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Vishnu is the expansion. We're trying to make the world Krishna conscious. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Let's slap a picture of Krishna on the front of the Shirsh Upanishad. No. Change it. Another time, Signs of Self-Realization. They put a picture of Prabhupada on the front cover. Why have you done this? Why is it a picture? The picture of the guru does not go on the front cover of the book. Okay, put it on the back cover. So that's where Prabhupada is, on the back cover. Yeah, I think Jayadvaita Swami told me. He told me the second story, and someone else told me the first story. So, because I had to produce the first Swahili edition of the Shirsh Upanishad. And the first Swahili edition of the Shirsh Upanishad was printed in the kitchen, or no, the classrooms, because Shruti had bought a printing machine. So we printed the Swahili edition, the first African book, the first African book of Srila Prabhupada was printed in the kitchen. The classrooms here, which were not classrooms. It was a printing room. Later on, the devotee decided that he started printing £5 notes. Because he'd heard. he sort of got the instruction wrong, you know, because Prabhupada said, if you ever get books, print... What was it? If you ever get money, print books. And he heard it the other way around. If you ever get books, print money. So he was printing £5 notes. So he had to take a little holiday with Her Majesty in a little room somewhere. So it's if you ever get money, print books, not the other way around, okay? Which is why everybody needs a guru for everything, because it's very easy to get these things. The joke was that he printed them on ordinary paper and they didn't even look like fivers, and he tried, but he was caught very quickly. So don't break the rules. And that Navadvip just cut me off. So Nectar of Instruction. Anyway, the first BBT devotees to get these first translations, they saw that you should go to Radhakund. So then they went to Radhakund, and then they told the Radha Damodar party, who went to Radhakund. And we didn't know anything about Radhakund. Nobody knew where it was. Prabhupada didn't tell anybody where it was. He went with a couple of disciples, those old pictures. But apart from that, just you didn't go there. Why would you go there? Prabhupada wasn't there. We don't have a temple at Radhakund. Why are you going there? Why are you going there? If it's not an ISKCON property, and there's no ISKCON devotees there, why are you going? It's got nothing to do with A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So they were then, some of them were young, athletic Americans, and they were having swimming races across Radhakund and, you know, doing flip dives into the waters and shrieking and yelling. And the locals were going, you know, who are these people, these white people, what are they doing? And so Prabhupada said, no one. And henceforward, no one shall go to Radhakund. So that went all around the movement, and nobody went to Radhakund. These days, we even have devotees wearing Radhakund tilak. We have devotees going living in Radhakund. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, he said, Radhakund would be a nice place were it not for all these charlatans who live here. So there's a difference between Rupa Goswami going there, and there's like six people, and it's all surrounded by trees, and it's a very small pond. Okay? And he's very peacefully writing his nectar of instruction, his Upadeshamrita, commanded for him to write by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And, 450 years later, when it's when people have moved in, they have a saying in South India, Kshetrabasi Mahapapi. Kshetrabasi means one who lives in a holy place, Mahapapi. He's come there to clean his sins. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's a great bhagat. It is a great bhakta. So one who's living in a holy place, it's not always the case that that person is really, really surrendering. Surrendering is an internal process. It's a process of struggle. You cannot make the holy place do the surrendering for you. It's like it's easy to go to Vrindavan and think, I just feel so surrendered here. It's the Krishna, Govardhan Hills. No, you're trying to get the environment to do the surrendering for you. Internally, you remain unchanged. Therefore, Prabhupada said, if a person's really not trying to surrender, he should only stay 3 days in Vrindavan. Only 3 days in Vrindavan. So we followed that instruction. We followed that instruction. We only stayed 3 days in Vrindavan. And the only time when I didn't do that was when we did the Vrindavan mandala, the Braj mandala parikrama. And that is a surrender, let me tell you. It is a physical, physical surrender. So this whole business of surrender means that we are able to utter prayers like Yamunacharya in his Stotra Ratna, beautiful prayers of surrender. Bhaktivedanta Thakur chose out of these 62 prayers. Yamunacharya wrote these prayers in sort of 930, 940 AD, like that. He was in the line, in the Sri Vaishnava line. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur took this book and he chose 27 of those verses and he based his Gita Mala around these 27 verses. And you can actually see the sort of stanzas, how they go. So these verses of surrender, they're rather beautiful. And Prabhupada used to like to chant. Of course, the first verse that Prabhupada chants, we can't find in the Stotra Ratna, and neither can any Sri Vaishnava find out where this verse is. So it was Yadavadi Mamacheta Krishna Padaravinde Navanavarasa Damanujatarantamasit Tadavadi Bhatanari Sangame Smaryamani Bhavadi Mukavikaram Sushtu Nishtivanamcha. We can't find that verse, but Prabhupada uses it to great effect. And then he takes his cup, and he says, and I spit also, and he spits into his cup. So this is one of the businesses of surrender, is to identify the obstacles to surrender and basically reject them. And that's what we do. So sometimes, in the Madhva Sampradaya, the young Guru Kulis, when they go to the toilet in the morning and evacuate, they chant mantras against Shankaracharya when they're passing. They chant against Mayavadi philosophy. And the Sri Vaishnavas have a lot of, they get into tilak in a big way because the body is an obstacle. Whereas we have to be careful because our philosophy states that the body can be sacralized, made sanctified, by perfectly using it in devotional service. So sometimes we don't see the body as an obstacle, we see it as our friend. And then we see Krishna as our friend. And then we see everything as our friend. And again, we've fallen into the trap of not being cautious enough. We should be 3 times cautious to 1 times accommodating. And Prabhupada had a lot of cautious messages. You know what he said? He said, do not turn Bhaktivedanta Manor into a brothel. Because women are coming here and living, and boys are coming here and living. He said, do not turn Bhaktivedanta Manor into a brothel. I mean, would he ever do such a thing? Would any of us sitting in this room ever think of doing that? But Prabhupada goes, because he sees the future, like Vasudev, and Nanda Maharaj doesn't know how Vasudev is seeing the future. But Vasudev, he wasn't just a sort of nice man. Not only was he Sutapa, but he was also the prime minister of Ugrasena. He was the prime minister of the Shurasena kingdom. Now, he was a really, really big man. That's why his wedding was like such a big affair. He was the man. He was the prime minister getting married. Okay? So we read about his wedding and we think, wow, was that what a wedding was like in Vedic times? And now every merchant and every shopkeeper tries to give their daughter a wedding that's like Vasudev's wedding. Actually, a wedding is meant to be a very simple affair that you don't have to pay too much money for. And now everybody spends their whole life saving for their wedding. I even speak to devotees, even devotee couples. And I say, so now you're associating. When are you going to get married? They said, oh, maybe we're getting married in 2 years. I said, why? So that we can afford to have a wedding at Bhaktivedanta Manor. For devotees, there has to be an arrangement that you get married when you need to get married. And when you need to get married is before you live together. Okay? Just frame that concept. You don't live together before you're married because you're saving up to get married. You just sort of, you know, it doesn't make sense. I'll hang on to the boat and catch fish and make money selling fish so that I can afford a ticket on the boat. No, get your ticket, then get on the boat, and you'll be comfortable. Okay? Sorry. Okay, that was a little public service announcement to whoever is listening. So I think that one thing that, if we can call them senior devotees, are trying to get over to junior devotees is how, in the name of just trying to keep people somehow in Krishna consciousness, we've become a little bit lax. A little bit lax. You know, the relationship between preacher and who we preach to. We don't give the same messages often. We give a rather comfortable message. Rather comfortable message. And sometimes, of course, it's a message just bordering on impersonalism. And we have to be very careful that in the name of giving Krishna consciousness, we don't just give some baby food. You know how you give a person baby food? But you give a baby food, okay, when it's all mashed up. And a little bit later, you really have to give rice. You know, not mashed up rice, not paste, but you give them, you know, what their digestion can handle. So either we're initiating people too soon, because, you know, afterwards we need to baby them so much, right? Or, I don't know, somehow this year's crop is just people who can't take Prabhupada's message straight. But Prabhupada has a message. Our duty as the next generation, or your duty as the next generation, is to give that message as we received it, and to give that message that you cannot become Krishna conscious by living at Radha Kund. You cannot become Krishna conscious just by imitating, you know, someone in the 24-hour kirtan, you know, just by singing nicely with a harmonium. Don't give us that pretense and tell us that this is what Prabhupada wanted. It's not, because Prabhupada throughout his life cautioned us against these things. You can't get Radharani's mercy by chanting Radhe, 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 Radhe. Okay. And we know these things, but because devotees like to do it and it's popular and we are the kirtan movement and we're getting people to chant kirtan, then sometimes we just, at the edges of ISKCON, we are engaged in baby food giving. But at least let's not take that and bring it inside the, you know, we could say inside the concentric rings that make up ISKCON. For some people, yes, okay, they're just coming. But let us know what the actual message is. So you can choose to give different versions of Prabhupada occasionally to bring a person closer. But then at some point, you must give, you know, you must give the real message. Otherwise, people will miss surrender this lifetime round. We can't allow that to happen. Because for a mission, for a preaching mission, you can't allow that to happen. Because what will you preach? Second generation, baby food. Third generation, even sloppier. You know, fourth generation, just a rice-flavored drink. Rice milk. Last generation will be water with no hint of rice at all. Okay? As a difficulty. So as much as we are trying to attract, we're also trying to give a message of reality. I didn't want to take too long, but you got me going. Sutapa, you asked the wrong question. So just a few verses. Here's Yamunacharya and his verses of surrender. And he says, let me submit this one piece of information to you, my dear Lord. Without you, these are prayers of surrender. Without you, I have no master. And without me, you don't have a suitable candidate for your mercy. This is our eternal relationship, ordained by fate. My dear Lord, please protect me. Do not reject me. Whatever I possess in terms of this body and its paraphernalia, and whatever I have from the modes of nature, today I offer at your lotus feet. Okay? That is called prapati. Property. So that is called the surrender. Okay? But it means that we don't hang on. We don't hang on. So then, I know that I am eternally your property. O Lord, please kindly give me pure devotional service. And this is the verse that Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses in his Gita Mala. He says, let me take birth even as an insect in the home of those whose only happiness is your service. Let me not take birth, even as a Lord Brahma, in the home of any other people. Please place me within the sight of the great souls from whom you cannot bear even a moment's separation, and who, yearning for a single glimpse of your transcendental form, consider both impersonal liberation and the most intense sense pleasure as worthless as a blade of straw. Beautiful prayers. Beautiful prayers. And it goes on and goes on and goes on. But then he expresses his reservation. Okay, now I'm surrendering, but what happens if yesterday I'm attacked by the putana of doubt or the putana of the false gurus who take me away from my spiritual master's feet? What happens then? How will I, uncivilized, degraded, fickle, a breeding ground of envy, ungrateful, proud, overcome by lust, addicted to cheating, cruel and sinful, how will I be able to cross this shoreless ocean of pain and serve your lotus feet? So that is a good mentality. Yes, I have surrendered, but how is it going to be possible for a person like me to get over this ocean of birth and death? Surely it's not possible. So that leads someone like Vedanta Deshika, who's another great poet, to say a prayer to the Lord. He said, my Lord, you are like the bird catcher and the bird seller. He said, you have strings around the bird's feet so they don't fly away. And the bird flaps his wings, but the bird seller pulls them back. My Lord, I know that I will never stop flapping to fly away from you. Even though I've surrendered to you, I will never stop trying to get away from you. But my Lord, I ask you this. Please never stop tugging on that string. Please keep pulling me towards you. So he's expressing himself that, yes, I've surrendered. But residual, that fan keeps going. I could be taken away at any time. So my Lord, please keep pulling. Even if I flap and fly away, please keep pulling me close to you. So this is his prayer. And then finally, Yamunacharya says this. He says, he bargains. He also bargains with the Lord. He says, my Lord, do you remember that prayer that you made to Vibhishan? That anyone who once surrendered to you will always be protected. So then he says, Nanu prapana sakrid evanata tavaham asmiti yachamana. Tavanukampyas smarata pratigyam mareka varajam kim idam pratam te. My Lord, do you remember your promise? Do you remember your promise that if a person once surrenders to you, he said, how can he address Krishna like this? Do you remember that promise that, of course, he's addressing God. But do you remember that thing that you said to Vibhishan? Okay. Do you remember your promise that if a person once surrenders to you and says, O Lord, I am yours, because this is what initiation is meant to be. O Lord, I am yours. You will give mercy to him. Do you remember that promise? So, why am I excluded from your promise? So he's bargaining with the Lord. You've said it. I've done it. Why are you leaving me out? These are some of the aspects of surrender. We're confident of Krishna's protection, and yet at the same time, in order to remain confident, we have to remain vigilant. This is the thing. The spiritual master gives us that vigilance. Do not set it to the side out of relaxation or the idea that now I've become somewhat advanced. Now we have a little list of the things that we think that we've acquired since we have surrendered to Krishna. But these can be the source of our pride, and we have to be very vigilant that Putana does not enter into our life and sort of very gradually create doubt. All right. Thank you very much indeed for listening so intently. I have noticed no one fell asleep. I hope I kept on topic. Thank you. Any questions? Or actually, it's getting on, isn't it? Those who want to go to breakfast and surrender to the Lord in his breakfast form. But is there a question?